load the plates and lift the weights, and we are mates, and weights are great. And as of late, we pontificate about the weights and make a podcast.
Sumo is cheating. This is Weekly Weights with Alex and Will.
All right. Welcome to episode 20. 20.
20.
Of Weekly Weights.
I never thought we'd get to number 20.
Yeah, I thought I would have killed you by now.
I can just see all these hurdles on the way.
Hurdles of Berkman. Me running over Berkman.
And you can tell we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel today because...
Yeah, two of the greatest bench presses in Australia are talking about bench press.
Yeah, here we are on how to fix your bench press, aka the advice we can give but struggle to take edition of Weekly Weights.
Do as we say, not as we do episode.
Yeah, do as we say, not as we do episode. Jokes aside, though, we did get a lot of good feedback from the Fixing the Squat episode. If you haven't listened to it, do you remember what number that was?
It was 14, I think.
Fuck, was it that long ago? Okay, well, Fixing the Squat, episode 14-ish of Weekly Weights. Give that a listen. We're going to run through a pretty similar template today, talking about some of the common issues we see with bench presses amongst our clients, friends, and ourselves. Most likely, this will be a reflection episode. And then some ways we can go about fixing them and some things we just generally think about programming for the bench to get better.
So I think I'm going to start off the bat by saying that most problems in the bench press are caused by some issue in the setup. And generally in our setup, we want to create an environment for us to be productive through the press. And I think we do that through creating tension throughout the body and stability throughout the body.
Something interesting that Nathan Baxter said on our last episode was that when you distill the bench press down to its most important components, it pretty much is an exercise focused on, yeah, creating shoulder stability, and anything that can improve your shoulder stability and your bench press position is likely to translate to a better press.
Yeah, so if we are able to create that environment through stability, from all the way from our toes all the way to our shoulders and then through our hands, if we're able to create that stability and that tension, all it really becomes is just bend your elbows, straighten your elbows. And like it really is that simple.
Full disclosure to the audience, we're recording this currently at Chateau de Hayes and
slash desk,
and Alex and Chrissy's dog Ace has taken it upon himself to do some Burke's Backyard, shout out me, some Burke's Backyard work around here, and he's been digging up the pot plants and dragging them around the apartment. So Alex has gone off on a wild goose chase to monitor Ace. All right, we're back in the studio. So we more or less agree the bench press is about creating stability and then moving your elbows. So I actually taught a woman the bench press this morning. It was her first time ever doing it.
Give her a shout out.
Shout out Clarissa. I'm actually trying to convert her to powerlifting. Like, she's quite talented for for someone who hasn't really done much lifting, like, just moves really well.
Yeah, she does move well.
Anyway, so when I distilled it down to her, I basically said our job is to create tension through the torso, stability through the shoulders, and then to keep your joints stacked at all times through the press. And I think more or less when we start talking about all of these technical issues, you know, at least from my perspective, if you look at it through that prism of, like, you know, is there stability where we need stability and are the joints stacked where they're moving, then, you know, that's more or less what I'm looking for a good bench.
Yeah, completely agreed there.
All right, sweet. So in that case, let's just sort of take it from the top. What's the most common issue you see in the bench, Alex? Or starting from the setup, I guess, from point one, what's something that you see?
The most common would be shoulder stability, so control of the scapula. So obviously we want our shoulders to be pinned back, so that would be retraction, and we want them to be down, so that would be depression. So the failure to hold stability through these two positions is probably the most common thing that I see.
Yeah, so again, I agree, and this isn't just something that I think is really important in the setup. When I list a couple of the technical issues I see, I think you can kind of distill that down to losing that shoulder position, so not having that scapular control during either the descent or the press as well.
So what are some things that we can do before we get a new lifter, before we even get them under the barbell, what are some things that we can do to teach them how to control their scapula before they've even got a bar in their hands on the bench?
So,
maybe some warm-up drills, activation drills. Yeah. What are some things?
So, like, I commonly get lifters to do things like band pull-aparts.
Yep. That was my first thought as well.
Yeah, so band pull-aparts are a good one. And I actually think Some of the push-up drills and push-up variations are also a good way to actually get a feeling for scapular movement.
Yeah, scapular push-ups.
Yeah, so, yeah, scapular push-ups and some other serratus work I think is important. I think serratus work is probably a little bit underappreciated by powerlifters in general because we think of the bench as a movement in which the scapula shouldn't move, and the serratus is a scapular stabilizer, but it's also involved in, like, well, we think of it as a scapular mover. It helps your scapula protract and upward rotate, neither of which we seem to think we want during the bench, but it's still, I think, got an important role. So things like some scap push-ups and stuff, some band pull-aparts, but also just doing push-ups where you actually practice the movement with less scapular movement, and you feel what it's like to have your scapula spread, so you do a long press versus a short press. Things like that can kind of give people a little bit of kinesthetic sense for what is actually going to go on before you lie them down on the bench.
Yeah, one more that I like is what I call a face pull, but it's to the chest. So it's kind of like we're mimicking the eccentric component of the bench.
I think I've seen you do this. This is where you do like a band pull, but with like your elbows go wide and back.
Yeah, it's like you would attach a rope to a cable machine, sort of in line with where the barbell would sit. So I guess like in line with the sternum, and you pull the elbows out and hold and squeeze and pinch and keep those elbows still, and then you let them control back in. So it's kind of like a, I guess, a chest pull.
Yeah. Having seen it, I know what you're talking about. Presume the listeners do as well. If you don't, DM Alex and he will give every single person a video demonstration. Even if you're 90% certain you know what it is, still DM Alex because he promised me before we recorded this episode that he'd address everybody by name in the video as well.
I promise.
All right. So lack of shoulder stability or retraction was my first one. We've spoken about what we're going to do before the setup.
Mm-hmm.
What about in the setup? How do you get people to put their shoulders where they need to be?
This one comes down to like trial and error and what the lifter, who the lifter is and how they like to get tight. But just, I think, teaching them the position first and then using the bench and using like the supports around the bench, like the safeties or something to pull yourself into position can be really useful. I think there's a couple of ways you can go about it. You can slide forward to the bench or you can slide back to the bench. But I think one underrated thing is using your legs to push your shoulders into position. So if we use our toes to push through the floor and we sort of, if we have our hands on the barbell, we want to pull the bar forward and then we want to push our toes back. So we're essentially pushing our hips and our shoulders closer together, which is creating that arch and allowing our shoulders to, this is getting our shoulders into depression. That's a great way to set up for depression. So pushing your feet back and down and then pulling the bar forward and using the front of the rack, the front of the lip of the rack to pull it forward and pull your lats on and pull your shoulders into depression.
Yeah, so mimicking that pretty much. I tend to get my lifters, one is your bench rack height shouldn't be that high. You should still have a little bit of an elbow bend when you get out of the rack. And if you're having to reach to get it out of the rack, then it's going to be really hard to hold your shoulder position. Sorry, mm-hmm. Quick tangent.
Yep.
Now, part of why that's important. So having set your feet one way or another, so I tend to set my feet and then pull myself out against the rack and then push myself back in using my feet. As Alex said, and most of my clients do it like that as well, though I'm not married to that setup. Having done that, while you're in the rack, I think it's useful to first think of almost doing like a band pull apart against the bar to pull yourself into some retraction. And then thinking, like Alex said, pulling the bar against the front of the J-hook. So thinking of doing like a straight arm lat pull down while holding that tension like you're doing a pull apart, can help pull your shoulders down into depression. Now, if you do that and you slide yourself down so that the bar is sitting not too high on your face, so it should probably be sitting, you know, at around your mouth or nose. That way you can... Alex likes it even lower, the chin.
Yeah, The neck even.
I tend to think sort of mouth or nose with like a soft hand out. But irrespective, you could go lower so long as you're not going to hit the racks on the way up. Pop it out with your hips high, and that's something I learned from Alex and my mutual friend JP, who gets a weekly shout out. There's your shout out, JP. Actually have your hips off the bench as you bring it out. That helps you maintain that depression. And then you can ease your hips back onto the bench from there, and your shoulder position should be set. And if you feel like you could get any tighter, I think the way to do it at that point is to squeeze the bar in your hands really hard and do that pull apart motion again.
Mm-hmm. Alex, I think one more thing with the setup is, you mentioned this, is setting the rack height in the right spot. And I think we really want to be close enough to the rack where it's just a very small movement to take the bar out, like only 3 inches or 4 inches or so. If it's any further than that, it's going to be really hard for you to hold your shoulders in position.
Yeah.
Because, well, especially if the rack's too high, you're going to pull yourself into protraction. And obviously, we said before, we want retraction. And if the rack is too low, it might be actually just using too much effort to get the bar out of the rack. So we need to make sure the rack is of the right height to allow just a small handout and allow us to hold our shoulders in position. And we want to make sure that we're not too far away from the rack.
Yeah, and that's a common error I see, particularly like in competitions where I've done handouts for the bench press, is people being like having the bar literally above their skull. Like, I don't know how they even fit on the bench, some of these people, and you're like, you're having to like reach the bar out to them and like throw out your lower back because you're supporting however much their bench press is, handing it out to them. It's a really inefficient way to have your shoulders set. So, you know, if you do that, I bet your bench press will improve immediately, just because you'll be able to get tighter if you just slide a little bit up the bench.
Yeah, I almost invariably, when I get new lifters come to me, if they've lifted before and their bench is a little bit inefficient, I'll usually take them down by 2 or 3 rack heights within like 3 weeks, just because they're learning how to get their shoulders down and back, and then all of a sudden their unrack is shorter and their range of motion is shorter and their arms appear shorter. So they can really bring that rack down. And a lot of the time, it's not even that. It might just be that it was just way too high in the first place.
Do you use any particular cues to your clients, like when they're actually on the bench, to teach that shoulder position? You know, do you say things like, you know, shoulders in your back pockets or anything like that?
I say pull the bar forward. So like we said before, pull it onto the lip. Yeah. And then pull your lats into the bar and push through the quads. So I'll cue quads and lats and pull it forward.
Yeah, so I haven't tended to do things like, you know, shoulders in your back pockets. I honestly just say, you know, like squeeze the bar and chest to bar, and that tends to sort of get people into that little bit of retraction. Yeah. But often I poke and prod people as well to get them to feel what the position's like. I haven't found a magical set of words.
Yeah, I find that most people, once you teach them how to retract, they actually retract quite well on the setup. And they usually would only protract when they press, which we'll get to later. But I find depression is the one that you can cue quickly and it can fix, like, just with one small movement, like a reminder.
Yeah. All right. So let's presume, at least up until this point, shoulder position's pretty reasonable. They've brought the bar out of the rack. Actually, sorry, one more thing, bringing the bar out of the rack. Do you like to have the elbow sitting under the bar and kind of flared when you bring it out? Or do you have your elbows tucked to your sides when you bring it out?
Yeah, I find tucking them can help hold shoulder depression as well.
Yeah. So I remember having this discussion with you on the gym floor, and I tend to agree that tucking them probably helps hold shoulder position, although something I've found is if people feel more comfortable unracking with a flared elbow, and in my instance that's the case, you then need to immediately think of like tucking your elbows to your sides and pulling your lats on while the spotter is still holding the bar. Because otherwise, you've sort of set yourself in that slightly elevated shoulder position as well.
Yeah. So as I'm cueing, pull the bar forward and pull it into the lip of the rack. Your elbows, if you do it at home, if you hold your hand out in front of you like you're gonna take a bench off the rack, if you say like pull the bar forward, your elbows will invariably go into like kind of into a tuck position.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just more of a reflection upon that. It's like you're pulling it in forward and you're on your lats, and then it comes out. And then you hold there and wait.
Yeah, okay, I'm cool with that. So anyway, we've brought the bar out, presumably well. Where should the bar be over the chest?
In the starting position.
Yeah.
The bar should be basically directly above where you're going to touch.
Yeah, so I'm more
almost,
or less agree.
Yeah, almost. We want it to almost travel in a straight line down and a straight line back up.
So I'd
slightly forward and slightly back.
Yeah, I... Slightly forward and slightly back, I can buy. This is something that we've spoken about a bit. I don't think a vertical bar path on the press is necessarily optimal. We'll get to that when we get to that. I think like it's probably not awful, but I think moving slightly back towards your face early off the chest is likely good. But I do think the descent should be very close to straight.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, if the bar is not directly above your touch point, like if you're moving down in a mad diagonal, then likely one, your shoulder position is going to be a little bit off, and when you hit your chest, your shoulder and elbow position is going to be off. But two, it must just feel really uncomfortable, because the bar should probably feel about lightest when you're holding it close to directly over where you're going to touch. Do you agree?
Yeah, one good sort of drill you can use is you can get a hand on the bar, and then you can ask them to stop where the bar feels weightless.
Yeah.
And that is essentially like where the bar's going to be the most balanced, and that's going to be the strongest position to start from.
Yeah.
So like, I feel like if you have the bar back, sort of closer to the rack, you'll feel like you're shaking a little bit and you won't be stable. But if you swing it forward a little bit, it'll feel good. And then if you swing it a little bit further forward again, too forward, it will shake again.
Yeah.
So you got to find that midpoint, kind of like a pendulum. You'll sort of pendulum back and forward. That midpoint is going to be where you want to start.
Yeah, and then I think the hard part for people is actually intuiting what straight down is, which that sounds really weird, but often people will start in about the right place and still not descend to the right touch point either.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we've got that correct start point. What should the descent resemble, in your opinion?
Yes, a straight line.
All right. And in terms of like, well, a straight line, I guess that almost entails that the elbows go out and the chest stays high. Like,
yeah,
you don't...
So we want, obviously we want stability in the shoulder.
Mm.
So we don't want any movement in the shoulder.
Yeah.
On the way down. And we almost want to bring our chest up to the bar as we pull the bar down to the chest. And I say pull the bar down to the chest because we really want to engage the upper back muscles, the rowing muscles, as we bring the bar down. And that's going to help us control the bar on the way up, and then it's going to allow us to press with more force on the way back up.
Yeah. So, like,
so yeah, pulling your chest up to the bar as you pull the bar down to your chest is how you're going to feel the tightest.
Yeah, so I tend to cue people two things on the descent, or one of the two things, depending on which they struggle with. It's either chest to the bar, or I almost invariably say elbows wide.
Yeah.
Because I think it's far more common than not that people sort of tuck their elbows a little bit too much on the descent, until you start saying elbows wide.
Yeah, so elbows wide or elbows out, pull the chest up to the bar, or squeeze your upper back.
Yeah.
Those are the common ones that I'll use. You mentioned tucking.
Mm.
What are the problems with too much tuck in the descent?
So the biggest issue with too much tuck in the descent, there's two. One is if it causes you to touch the bar artificially low.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's less of a problem than the second one. But yeah, if you tuck too much and touch the bar way too low, then you just have a longer, more inefficient press, and you have to create more flexor torque at the shoulder. So
your joints end up not stacked.
Well, like, feasibly your joints could be stacked if you have a relatively narrow grip, and you tuck. Oh, actually, no, I don't even think that's the case. But yeah, you could be like in an okay pressing position, I think, but you're going to end up way too far down your chest, like down as in towards your waist. That's one issue, but the one that probably more commonly happens is that the joints are really not stacked, like you said. So in this instance, the elbow would fall towards your waist relative to the wrist.
So the elbow would be in front of the bar.
Yeah. And that is really inefficient for pressing. And that's something I'm going to harp on a little bit as we go. But again, if you're listening to this in your lounge room at home, or driving or whatever, if you bring the imaginary bar down to your chest and you roll your elbow so that it sits towards your waist, you'll probably feel a little bit of like tightness in your shoulder. But then think about having a bar sort of pushing directly down towards what the imaginary ground would be. And there's a lever at your shoulder that's sort of rotating you open, so into external rotation. So you're having to create more internal rotation force to realign the bar against that. So your pecs are internal rotators, your lats are also internal rotators, and your rotator cuff muscle, your subscapularis is an internal rotator as well. So all of them are having to work overtime simply to sort of keep the bar coming up and in alignment, whereas if you were to keep all of your joints stacked, your pecs could just be working on adduction of the shoulder and flexion of the shoulder, which are the two main movements that should be happening in the bench, and you're not going to have as much stress put through those other internal rotators in the shoulder. So it's basically creating an extra moment arm that you're having to work against.
And then if we go in the opposite direction, so let's say you put your barbell where it should be, so wrist over elbow, or barbell over elbow, and then you go back.
Yeah, so in that instance...
That would be too much flaring.
Yeah, so in that instance, you've fallen into too much internal rotation. And so, again, in theory, your external rotators would have to do a whole lot of work to fix that. But what tends to happen, I'll come back to the second thing I'm going to say that. But what tends to happen is people just have a really shit bar path off the chest. So instead of doing like a hectic external rotation, because if you've ever done an external rotation at the gym and you're a powerlifter, chances are you do it with like, you know, 3 to 6 kilos or something, not with like 140 or 180 if you can actually bench. But so you don't really do an external rotation off the chest. What tends to happen is you have a really inefficient bar path. So you've overflared, and then most people actually press sort of towards their waist before their elbows come back under the bar. And the reason that's inefficient is because, again, do your little imaginary bench press and press towards the waist. And the distance between the bar and your shoulder, which is, and your shoulder is the joint at which your pecs and your delts are acting on, is lengthened, right? Which means that, again, if you're finding this hard to wrap your head around, imagine you were to be holding a hammer and you're either holding it at the very far end of the handle away from the head or up near the head. So even though the head weighs the same irrespective, the further from the head you're holding the hammer, the heavier it feels in your hand. That exact same process of leverage is at play here. If you get further from the shoulder, which is the point at which all the movement's happening, then you have to create more force to actually continue to flex the shoulder. So to continue to actually bring your arm up relative to the shoulder, which is what's happening as you press. So that early kick away from the shoulder to help you realign your elbows, which pretty much invariably you have to do, means that when you start to run out of gas in your bench, which we'll get to the sticking point eventually, but it's normally a couple of inches off your chest. When you get to there, you're further from the shoulder, which means you have to create more force to get through that sticking point, which means your press is likely to be twice as inefficient. Does that make sense to you, Alex, listening to it?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I think one way of simplifying it, and I think this is what I do in this podcast, I like to simplify complex problems that Will can explain and I can't quite explain, but I simplify them. The reason that I like the vertical bar path is because the elbows travel out, and the elbows and the direction that they point in relation to the wrist determines where the bar will travel.
Yeah, I'm following you. Go.
So if the wrist and the elbow are in a line, the elbow and the wrist kick out together and the bar will travel straight. If there's too much tuck, the elbow becomes in front of the bar. In front of the bar, but also in front of the wrist. And then the bar will want to travel back. And then the same goes for the opposite. If the elbow gets behind the bar is going to come forward. So for me, the bigger problem is too much flare and the shoulder falling into like kind of collapsing and the elbow getting behind the bar, because obviously pressing forward is not what we want. Back is okay, but I think straight is better.
So what you said about the shoulder collapsing reminded me of the second thing I was going to say when I got onto like hammers and stuff, which is that that internal rotation we spoke about. So that sort of overflaring of the elbow, which is the phrase Alex is using for it, where the bar sits lower on your torso than your elbow is.
Where the elbow gets behind the barbell.
Yeah, that is, at least in my observation, that is usually coupled with the shoulder elevating, which is why Alex and I were harping so much about shoulder position. So people who exhibit that problem, and I'm one of them, tend to be people for whom they lose a bit of depression, they lose a bit of retraction, their shoulder elevates and upward rotates a little bit as they hit the chest. And I suspect, but I don't really have enough, I'm not really good enough with anatomy or like physio or anything to know this for certain, but I suspect those people are also people who tend to have like very like stronger upper traps or upper traps that like to sort of do a lot of stability work and weaker serratuses. And again, that's just something I've sort of picked up chatting with physios, but that's not an idea I'm married to necessarily, but that's something I suspect, which is one of the reasons I think
sense.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I think serratus work is a little bit underrated by powerlifters, is because if your serratus is able to do its stabilizing job, then the upper trap doesn't have to grab on so much to create stability, because they kind of work in opposition in some ways.
So I think what we're essentially trying to say here is that when the barbell is on the chest, we want the bar to be in line with your elbow.
Yeah, basically.
From the side. So if we're looking at a bench press from the side and the bar is on the chest, we want the elbow and the barbell in a line.
Yeah.
If it isn't in a line, the bar has to travel in a weird bar path to get back to lockout.
Yep.
Or the shoulder position is going to be compromised at the bottom.
Yes.
And it's going to make pressing harder.
Yeah. why I think a slight kick towards your face off the chest is probably better than a straight line, in response to what Alex said, is for the same reason as why over-tucking is actually... over-flaring, I should say, is actually bad. And that's because by getting the bar moving back towards the face just a little bit off the chest, when you hit that sticking point, the amount of extension torque, therefore how much flexor force you have to create, is reduced a little bit. And for more on this, Greg Knuckles wrote an article. P.S. Greg Knuckles is coming on the show next week. Greg Knuckles wrote an article about, you know, fix your bar path for a better bench, which I obviously read because I wanted a better bench.
Did it work?
No. So maybe Alex is right. But you can read that on his website, which is Stronger by Science. It used to be Strength Theory. Where he actually cites some work on elite bench presses supporting the idea. But when that happens, I don't think that should resemble your elbow sort of tucking relative to the bar. I think what should happen is, as you come off the chest, your elbow should flare a little bit and still stay directly underneath the bar, if that makes sense. So you've touched like so, then your elbows come up and move towards your face just a little bit without your shoulders elevating.
Yeah, even when you're doing your demo, your shoulders are elevating a little bit.
Well, that could be my problem. But yeah, if you can do that, and it doesn't have to be a huge movement, but subtle and early, then I think that's mechanically more efficient. That's why I'm not entirely like your bar path has to be vertical. But I think a vertical bar path is certainly better than one that kicks towards your waist or one that's like an upside down J. Because if it's an upside down J, then you're losing your shoulder position towards the top, at least I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've grilled equipped powerlifting a little bit on this podcast already, but let's do it again. A lot of this tucking of the elbows comes directly from equipped bench press. And obviously when powerlifting began, it was all equipped and everyone benched in a bench shirt. So if you've never benched in a bench shirt, it kind of pulls you into this elevation before you have a barbell in your hand, just when you're at rest. So in order to get the bar to your chest, you really have to tuck your elbows a lot and you have to pull it down to your waist in order to get the bar to your chest. Yeah. So a lot of this, like tucking elbows and press back, a lot of this comes from equipped lifting.
Does press back come from equipped lifting? Because that, like, I've never benched in a bench shirt, but yeah, I remember reading so much West Side stuff being like press straight.
The shirt wants you to go to elevation. So you want to go back with the shirt and then you want to extend the elbow.
Right. That kind of makes sense. And so you throw your elbow out late.
Yeah. So it shoots back to your face when you're wearing a shirt, because that's where the shirt forces you.
Yeah.
So that kind of thought and that bar path and those things come from equipped lifting. And I think they've been wrongly assigned to raw lifting because it really is a different sport. So yeah, rant over.
Okay. I pretty much am with all of that. While we're talking about sort of elbow position on the chest, because again, cast your mind back to at the very start of this whole segment, I was saying pretty much if your torso is stable, your shoulders are stable, and your joints are stacked, you'll probably bench okay.
Yeah.
For people of differing proportions, it's going to feel different and be harder or easier for you to actually maintain that type of alignment.
Yep.
How much do you think proportions play a role in determining sort of like how your descent should be, look, and feel?
Just like when we spoke about with the squat, people are obviously built differently. And generally, what is comfortable is going to be the right answer. So if someone can do something comfortably and they're able to like progress, that's probably the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So long as it's not too far away from this sort of mold that we're trying to talk about. So if someone is going to have longer arms, there's going to be more movement forward of the elbow in the descent. So their bar path may be further away from straight than someone who has shorter arms. Just like someone who has a bigger arch is going to have a... easier time getting the barbell straight than someone who can't arch as well.
Yeah.
So I think those are some, I guess, like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Individual differences?
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
That we have to be aware of. So we're not trying to fit everyone to this mold.
Yeah.
And, you know, because we're people, we're not robots, we're not all built exactly the same.
Mm.
But if we can try and get them close to the mold and then it's comfortable, that's probably the right answer.
Yeah, and in general, I think with form prescription, like a really good example is sort of like starting position in the deadlift. Say like you have this sort of theoretical optimal and then you kind of work around it just a little bit with the individual you have in front of you, and likely they're not going to fall far from that optimal. Like it's a very good starting point, but once you like, you need to actually have a place to start that's, you know, informed before you can do anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So and something...
Yeah, we spoke about this in the squat. If it looks okay and it, for them, feels comfortable and we can see... We see it and we go, oh, yeah, that looks like... That looks fine.
Yeah.
Because we've seen a lot of bench presses, but we know what doesn't work and what does work. Then it's probably fine.
Yeah.
And that's sort of... As you see more and more lifting, you'll sort of get a better eye for that kind of stuff and you'll be able to like pinpoint maybe why is this wrong or why is that wrong or whatever.
So something like I have relatively long arms, yeah, as in like relative to the rest of me. And so in order for me to keep my elbows under the bar on the descent, I have to think almost like elbows to ears, for instance. Whereas I have some clients who have, yeah, much shorter arms where I can sort of say elbows out and they'll almost over flare immediately. You know, I train a guy who's kind of shorter and like pretty barrel chested and yeah, short arms. And when I say elbows out, he's like almost immediately over flaring because for him, almost like a tucked position has the bar going down straight because his arms are just short, you know? And so again, you have to actually pick the cue on the descent, which is kind of funny because you can be saying almost the opposite thing to two people, but you pick the cue on the descent that has the person hit the chest with the elbows under the wrist more so than you say like elbows flare. It just happens to be, in my experience, that elbows wide tends to be more commonly needed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, this comes back to similar to what we spoke about in the squat. Like if someone falls forward, you might cue heels.
Yeah.
If someone falls back, you might cue toes.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Like you don't want toes or heels, you want midfoot, but you're going to cue them whatever's going to get them the result that we want.
Yeah.
Let's take a break.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, we're both sick of it. We'll have a break. We'll be right back.
Weekly Weights.
Weekly Weights, episode 20. Alex and Will talking about fixing the bench. We're back on air. We were talking about issues with elbow position and stuff. And the sort of the crux of all these issues... Or I guess maybe the thing that ties together all these issues is this concept of losing tightness on the chest. Alex, what does it resemble and what's the problem?
It resembles generally the arch collapsing, so the bar having to travel further.
Yeah.
And because the bar has to travel further, we'll get the elbows generally go behind the bar. And like we spoke about before, that's very unstable on the shoulders.
Yeah.
And we're obviously traveling further. And because of this... we're then in a different position to where we were lowering the bar to then press from. So it's really, really inefficient. It's going to lead to some strange bar path action.
Yeah. So, you know, and yeah, from what Alex was saying there, like entirely agree. When the arch collapses, it's not just the arch collapsing itself that tends to be a problem. It's that as the arch collapses, you get that loss of shoulder stability and that loss of elbow position, which are the two things that Alex and I have sort of said are like the two really important parts of putting together a strong bench press. And so, you know, yeah, if you do lose your arch at the bottom of the bench, you've kind of undone all the hard work you've done in your setup and in your descent so far to actually line yourself up for the hard part, which is actually lifting the weight. So Alex, are there any particular cues that you use or things that you try and teach your lifters to try and sort of keep them tight as they hit the chest?
Well, a lot of them we've spoken about earlier, which is just in our setup and in our descent.
Mm.
So we spoke about the cues that we use in the descent. So bringing your chest up to the bar, pull the bar apart, or elbows wide, or elbows out, one of those three. And then the next part of that is the tempo at which we descend and how we touch the chest. So if we bring the bar down really, really quick, it's going to be hard for us to not crash down on our chest. So it's very important that we don't go too fast because then we're going to lose tension on the chest almost immediately. And it's also important that we don't go too slow because we're going to be fatiguing ourselves on the way down trying to control that load. And if it's maximal, you're not going to be able to press it if you're really, really tempoing it on the way down. So we want to find that sort of middle ground between too fast and too slow, but erring on the side of too fast.
Yeah. So I
and,
like,
and then the next point that I want to make, which is probably the most important bit, is how we touch the chest. And it has to be soft and like a feather on the chest. So one thing that I say is like soft touch or feather touch, or when I explain it, it'll be pretend like you have an egg on your chest and you want to touch it, but you don't want to crack the egg or something like that. We should almost not see the t-shirt move or the whatever we're wearing move. And it should almost be like we've just paused a video of like a bar on the chest.
Yeah. So I agree with almost all of that. I pretty much agree with all of it, actually. But something that you taught me that I thought was really useful when I was conceptualizing the descent of my bench press for a while was that it can be a little bit like the squat. It's like the first sort of, you know, half or even a tiny bit more of your bench press descent should be controlled and sort of setting up your descent path. And then you can speed up a little bit in the last bit, but you've got to maintain tension. And as it hits the chest, you've got to be ready to reverse immediately. But that smooth acceleration is, it like, or at least to me, resembles like a good bench press tempo. Yep. Whereas the reverse, where you start fast and then slow down, yep, I don't think tends to be
good. I think that makes the lift a lot harder. Because if the bar's moving quickly and then you try and slow it down, you're using a lot of energy to do that, which then you won't have to then press the bar.
Yeah.
Like in the squat, we cue the 40-90 tempo. It's very similar in the bench press. If we go to 100, like I said before, we'll come crashing down. The same in the squat, we'll fall apart at the bottom.
Sure. But
it's very similar.
In bench rather than 40-90, though, I might think more like 40-70.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. So not... not as much.
Not as quick, yeah. Not as quick to the chest. Because remember, in competition, we have to pause and the bar has to come to a complete stop.
Yeah.
So that's essentially why we practice the soft touch.
Yeah.
If it were touch and go in competition, we would probably bench a lot differently. We'd bench a lot quicker on the way down and we try and almost bounce it off the chest because you get a lot out of that.
Yeah.
But because it is a pause, we want that pause to be as quick as we can. So we need to control the bar as well as we can.
Yeah.
So touching softly and being able to stop it, like just on a dime, is really, really important.
So something I said to one of my lifters, shout out Tom Clark, the other day, which like I said almost jokingly, but he actually thought was kind of profound, was one of the reasons I give people touch and go bench press is that your touch and go bench press should be exactly like your pause bench press. It's just you don't have to pause it. So
yeah, absolutely.
Your descent tempo should be the same. You should be able to use it to feel out that groove. And then when you turn the bar around, you should be feeling that tension as you hit the chest so that you're ready to reverse the bar straight away. And then when you transition that to pausing, all you're doing is just waiting a moment before you reverse it, you know? But you've got to actually practice that tempo and that generating of tension on the way down. And that's why I think touch and go is a good method to do it, is because it gives you a chance to feel that out. And once I gave that to him, he suddenly sort of started to actually click his normal bench press a little bit better because he started taking the lessons from his touch and go into his normal bench, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
And that was literally almost like a one-day switch for him.
Yeah.
You know.
I think it's really important that we cue every bench variation that we do where we get to the chest with a soft touch to teach us how to touch softly. So if we were to do like a tempo bench, for instance, we might be, you know, up to 5 or 6 seconds on the way down, and then we want to touch soft and reverse it. If we're doing a pause bench, it might be a 3-count pause or a 4-count pause or something. It's the same thing. We're just coming to a complete stop. So we're getting really, really comfortable with the bar being on our chest. We're getting really, really comfortable with holding that position when the bar's on our chest. And the more comfortable we can be, the more we're able to recreate that for that one chance we have in comp.
Yeah. So let's presume that somebody's actually hit their chest. They're holding their chest high. They're, you know, or like their position's great. And they start to press. What cues do you use in the press itself?
For someone who has longer arms and will bench in like in a more forward and back type of way, I'll press back to the face initially.
Yeah.
For someone who will press in a straight line, I'll just cue elbows.
Yeah.
That's really it. Because like I said right at the beginning of this podcast, everything that we do before the press is what makes the press easy. And then all the press is straightening your arms. And really that's as simple as it is. It's just, you just lock your elbows.
Yeah. So I agree. yeah, again, agree entirely in principle. One or two other cues that I sometimes use are, again, shout out JP, short press, which we'll get to in a moment because we're going to talk about losing retraction as you press. But sometimes I'll, instead of saying elbows, I'll say like hands out or like pull the bar apart, yeah, which like achieves the same thing. It's just, you know, again, if you do your imaginary bench press and think of literally just throwing your fists out to the side, yeah, straight away.
Yeah, I'll cue pinkies out.
Yeah.
It's like the outside of your hand.
Yeah, like if you squeeze your pinky and throw it out.
Pinky's wide or pinky's out, yeah.
Yeah, there's that. And then sometimes as well, particularly for people who are prone to elevate a little bit or lose their arch as they start to press, I might tell them like head back into the bench. And so I might even say like, you know, head and hands or something where it's like head back, hands wide. Yeah. But essentially I'm looking for the exact same things as Alex there. So unless you've got something to add, we can probably move on.
No, that's it. But before we continue, I wanted to bring up the idea of lower body, the lower body, because we haven't mentioned that yet.
Yeah.
Our lower body in bench press is really, really important in, obviously, it is our contact with the floor. So it's very important for us to have tension in our entire lower body through the movement, which we didn't actually mention before, but yeah. All the way from your toes to your hands is where we need tension. And if we lose some of that tension in our lower body, the arch can collapse, and then what we were talking about before, we can lose tension on the chest. So it's very important that, especially in the descent of the bench, we try and really squeeze our glutes and we try and drive our knees out and we try and push our feet into the floor. And that's going to really like perk us up and tighten everything from head to toe.
Yeah.
And it's not about using leg drive. It's about creating leg stability. And that's something that I really never cue is like any violent thrust of the hips or any movement through the glutes to help us off the chest. Because if, like I said before, if we can create the environment on the way down, all it is the elbows.
Yeah, almost invariably when I'm getting people to bench press, I'll poke around at their hips and stuff initially as they're setting up. And then once they're doing that, I almost like leave it alone. Because if they've created the stability there, that's almost all I'm looking for.
Yeah.
One thing I have found useful, I'm actually curious for your opinion on this because I don't think we've spoken about it before, is once I'm in my arch and set up, you know, I think like kick through the front of my feet and push my knees out at the same time. But I've found it useful as I take my breath, I try and take my breath down into my belly, I actually crunch my abs on simultaneously as I'm doing that, which seems counterintuitive because your abs should lower your arch. But I find that doing that actually sets me much more stable through the torso. And do you find that to be the case yourself?
Well, yeah, I've only just recently started benching with the belt.
Yeah.
And I've actually found that it holds me in quite nicely and I actually quite like it.
Yeah.
The only thing that after the setup that I'll cue with the lower body is driving the knees wide.
Yeah.
Because people can get lazy with the tension through the feet.
Yeah.
And really forcing the knees out creates that tension from the floor and then can sort of carries us through to the hips and then carries us through to the shoulders.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I agree with all of that. So let's move on to as somebody's pressing, an error that I see, and I'm less convinced this is a big deal for a maximum effort single, but I definitely think it's a problem when you're doing rep work, is protracting as you press. So protraction is the opposite of scapular retraction. So if you squeeze your shoulder blades together, that's retraction. If you reach your arm out ahead of you as far as you can and you feel your shoulder blades come apart, that's protraction. And so when people press and protract, there's two issues. One is that it lengthens the press. And I think that can be an issue. And certainly with max effort presses, actually not so certainly with max effort presses, that can be an issue. But definitely with rep work, it's an issue because the more important one is that your shoulders are suddenly in that unstable position. So when you go to do your descent, finding that strong position on the chest is hard again. The reason I say I'm less convinced it's an issue with a max effort press. And when I say I'm less convinced, it's not to say I don't think it's an issue. It's that I'm not sure what I think yet. The reason I say it may not be as much of an issue with a max effort press is if you were to protract a little bit and like your torso would almost fall away from the bar late-ish in the press, it could sort of almost keep the bar moving. But I don't know. I don't think that's a good idea, but I certainly think it would be bad for your subsequent reps. Like your subsequent reps are fucked once your shoulder position's gone. So in rep work, definitely protracting's bad. In max efforts, it's good not to protract, and it's somewhere between neutral and bad to protract, in my opinion, but I'm not 100%. Actually, what do you think, Alex? Because
I think it's okay in a max effort, like if you're doing a single.
Yeah.
Especially when it gets really, really hard and you're kind of just throwing everything into it to lock it out. I think it's okay because it doesn't affect the next reps. But if we get into the habit of doing it when we do singles, it's going to show itself in rep work, and then it will have a problem. It will create a problem as the set goes on.
Yeah.
And then I guess it could teach you further and further bad habits, I guess.
Yeah. I guess here's another thing.
I think the main issue is that when you protract the shoulder, you'll go into some elevation as well, and the bar will fall closer to the rack than where you want it. So then you're going to have to heave it forward to get back to the right spot on the way down. So then you're teaching yourself this excessive forward and back, forward and back, forward and back pressing.
Yeah.
And like we've said, we want it to be more or less in a straight line, maybe a little bit back to the face. So maybe a little bit forward and a little bit back, but definitely not a lot forward and a lot back.
Yeah. And another thing to think about, I'm actually having all of these thoughts while we're having this discussion. Another thing to think about is when you bench, like none of your prime movers really protract the shoulders or should. So your shoulders protracting are kind of like a failure of stability in some respects. Like it's not because your prime movers are exerting heaps of force that you protract. You're protracting because you can't create enough stability. So again, like, if that loss of stability doesn't entail a loss of performance for your subsequent reps because you're only doing one, then less of a cost. But if you're doing rep work, then that lack of stability is going to play up, and it means the quality of your later work goes down. Your prime movers can't do their job, ergo you can't train your bench as well.
Yeah, so if you do have that issue where you protract a lot, it might be because you're just not very stable through the shoulders.
Yeah, well, like, more than likely. What else? Any other particular issues that you spot? There's one that I can think of.
Oh, also one more point on the protraction. One way to fix it, which I've found to be very useful, especially when doing a set of, you know, 6+, is to do multiple reps per breath.
Yes.
I think as you breathe in, if you take a big breath into your chest is going to rise, and subsequently your shoulders are going to come back. As your shoulders then come forward when you protract through the press, your chest is going to fall, and as you breathe out, the same thing is going to happen. So if you're able to hold your breath in and focus on those short, stabby presses, it's very unlikely that your shoulders are going to come forward into that protracted position. So one thing that I like to do is get, especially when my lift is doing touch and goes, anywhere from 6 to 10 reps under one breath can really keep their shoulders in the same position and create that repeatable pressing pattern, which then will show itself in on the platform.
Yeah, and so I agree completely. And I tell my lifters, you know, do however many reps you're going to do per breath. But then when you actually choose to take a breath, you should stop, get your breath, get your position, and go again. I don't think breathing sort of as you begin your descent is a good idea at all, because, you know, your shoulder blades sit on your rib cage moves as you breathe. So if you take a big breath and your rib cage is moving while you start your descent, then your shoulder blades are pretty much, by definition, going to be sort of moving with them. So you've taken away that stability. So you have your breath in a pause between your reps, then you get going again once you're set and stable.
Yeah, so huge breath, pull the shoulder blades back and down again, try and arch even more, and then continue.
All right. Then the one other technical issue, and this technical issue is one that is basically like symptomatic of either losing tightness or having bad elbow position or inconsistent elbow position, is having an inconsistent touch point on the chest. So basically, if you're not touching in the same place, there's a very good chance that your elbows and shoulders aren't, well, it's like by definition, your elbows and shoulders are in a different position each rep, which means likely that, you know, only one of those positions is optimal. So you don't want to be doing that. Like, I'd rather you touch in the same place. If I got a new trainee, I'd rather you touch in the same place every single time wrong, so I could fix it and you could start touching in the same place every single time right, than you touching 10 different places, because then I'd say do that one only. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a great way to illustrate this is to just put chalk on the bar.
Yeah, 100%.
And put one chalk mark on the bar and then show the lifter what their shirt looks like at the end of the set. And if there's 6 marks and they've done a set of 8, it's probably not very good.
No.
And a great way a great exercise that we can use to sort of develop a consistent touch point is a tempo bench. So it's really, really slow and controlled on the way down. Obviously, we use a light weight, like I'm talking 60, 65%. And it's that real, real control, that very soft touch, and it's going to be in that same spot. And because you're going slower, it's a lot easier to be accurate. And we're trying to ingraining that pattern.
Yeah. All right. So I think we've, having covered all of that, spoken about most of the actual technical issues we're seeing in the bench, right? And having listened to all of that, hopefully you can appreciate why, to Alex and I at least, when we talk about what are the elements of a good bench, it's basically stable torso, stable shoulders, and joints stacked.
And leg stability.
And, yeah, well, I mean, I said stable torso as throwing a bone to leg stability, but all good. So the next questions, I guess, and it's funny, we haven't even really addressed that that much yet, is what muscles are important to have strong for the bench? And how do we go about getting them strong? So, Alex, what are the primary movers?
The prime movers, pecs, triceps, and the front of the shoulder.
Yeah. Okay. And any secondary movers?
I think it's very important to have a strong upper back, especially.
Yeah.
And like, other than that, I guess good control of the shoulders.
Yeah.
Strong legs can help you be tighter.
Yeah. That's it.
But, you know, that's really it.
Yeah. So the bench.
So, yeah, the whole body.
The whole body. Yeah. Yeah, the bench is like in its simplest form, the bench is literally like pec, anterior delt, tricep movement, and everything else has to be strong enough and stable enough to let them do their job well.
Yeah, it's very rare that you'll get someone with a great bench press technique whose legs are letting them down.
Like, if that person exists, actually, I mean, we can pretty much guarantee that person doesn't exist because the best benchers in the world are Paralympians. So, like, yeah, no. Basically, it's, yeah, chest, shoulders, and triceps. The next question is basically, if you were to have a weakness in any of those three, or actually, no, better question, which of those three is likely to limit you? How would you see any of them as a limit, like being exposed as a limitation in a bench? So which is the one that limits you?
They can all limit you.
Yeah.
I think most people are going to miss... straight off the chest, and that's like, you know, an inch or two off the chest, and that's more a representation of just overall system weakness, not muscular weakness.
Mm-hmm.
If you do miss higher than that, then it's obviously, it could be triceps.
Mm.
Or it could be one of the things we spoke about before in setting up wrong and trying to move the bar too quickly off the chest and then getting caught because you're in a bad position. But that's not really a strength weakness. That's sort of a positional problem.
Yeah. So if you listen to Weekly Weights episode one, we actually spoke about what happens when people just like kook their bench descent and lose tightness on the chest, where you could miss early in your bench and it's not necessarily because you're weak, it's because your position sucks. And that's more likely to be exposed at heavyweights. But let's just presume somebody's actually like, yeah,
if your relatively position, stable. If your position is good, you actually probably want to miss like 2 inches off the chest because it means like the weight you picked was just too heavy.
Yeah.
And you just need to keep getting stronger, I guess.
Yeah.
If you miss really high, there's a lot of work you could do on the tricep to lock it out.
Yeah.
But other than that, that's kind of it.
So when Alex said all of them could be the reason for failure, it brought to mind a concept that's, again, going to be a little bit hard to explain, but luckily we have our imaginary bench press to help us. So imagine you're holding a bar in your hand and go down to where you would be when you touch the chest. In this instance, because the bar is of a fixed length, and when you grip the bar, the distance between your hands is fixed, right? If you straighten your elbows, so like you think throw your hands out, like I've said to you, because the bar is of a fixed distance, the only way that you can actually straighten your elbow is to also have your humerus, so your upper arm, come up and towards the body, right? Which is one of the functions of the pec. That's adduction at the shoulder. By the same token, the only way that you can adduct the shoulder, so the only way that you can like do a pec fly when your arms are a given distance apart, is to couple that with extension of the elbow, which is the triceps job. So when the pecs and triceps are working in the bench, they're doing their job together. Having strong pecs helps your triceps do a little bit less work. Having strong triceps lets your triceps do a little bit less work. I'm sure somebody a little bit smarter than me as far as like biomechanics goes could tell you at which points in the bench press either of them is most advantaged, and give you a really great explanation why. But in short, the lower end of the bench press, the pecs tend to have to pick up a little bit more work and the triceps are kind of giving them a kick along. And then at the upper end of the bench press, the triceps are doing a little bit more work and the pecs are giving them a kick along. The reason that people sort of miss a couple of inches off the chest is because they've just begun that movement and they hit kind of the weakest range of motion and the one in which they have to create the greatest flexion torque at the shoulder but where the pecs are in a position where it's particularly hard to do that, and unless you had particularly monstrous triceps to aid in getting through that range, if your pecs aren't strong enough, you're not getting there. And so what happens is the sort of some strength of that system isn't enough to power through that little sticky point, which is, yeah, a couple of inches off the chest. So if you're missing really high, you'd have to have pretty atrocious triceps and, yeah, whatever.
Yep.
Anyway, I hope that was insightful to you.
Probably not.
Alex didn't give a shit. He was texting while I did that. That pretty much covers the sticking point. So I guess the question then is, if we need big, strong chest, and you were saying upper back stability helps, which I agree with, what do you think are the sort of ways we would go about, you know, we would go about bringing up somebody's lagging bench?
Lagging bench or just bringing up a bench?
Well, let's start, yeah, just go bringing up a bench.
So it's going to depend what phase you're in.
Yeah.
In a more general phase, we'll go to more general exercises. So we'll go a little bit further away from the competition list. We'll use a bit higher volume. So for those higher volume sets, mostly it's going to be touch and go work. Mm-hmm. And this could be done like a thousand ways. Regular comp with grip, close grip, mid grip, feet up, and then all those things. Incline, same thing. Blah, 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 blah.
I think with the bench, it benefits, and this is probably at least partly to do with sort of like my heritage training with Amir for a long time, but I think the bench benefits a lot from bodybuilding work, and particularly in hypertrophy phases, but I think all like during peaks, the bench can sustain a little bit more variety and a little bit more volume than the other two lifts as well. I think that's also just because it's less systemically taxing, but during general phases, I like to see people do a good amount of touch and go bench volumes. They're still practicing that groove, but then be smashing the chest and shoulders and triceps with a variety of other presses, and particularly presses, things like dumbbell presses and close grip benches and things where you get the advantage of actually taking those muscles that are prime movers through a longer range of motion and loading them a bit more specifically. Because although I think like you could pretty much do just heaps of high rep bench to build a really good bench and that would help, the nice thing about using exercise variety is that you can actually sort of target stimulus a little bit to the muscles that you think can handle a little bit more without as much sort of like systemic work being done. So doing some dumbbell benches, doing some incline bench, close grip benches, doing some shoulder and tricep isolation work, God forbid, doing some pec flies, things like that, I think is actually really useful because you basically just need to get really jacked through those muscles, you know, and couple that with technical proficiency. But you get technically proficient by practicing the bench press over and over, whereas you can get jacked by doing all sorts of other exercises, and it keeps things fresh and it lets you, yeah, sort of spread the stress around a little bit.
Yeah, completely agree with everything you said. If we look at the weight class, if we look at any local competition, apart from a light guy who's going to be an outlier, every big bencher is a big guy or a big girl.
Yeah.
And that is because muscle drives the bench press, I think, better than the other two lifts. Mm. So it's a great, great, great idea to try and pack on some size in the upper body if you want to bench big. And the other thing we didn't mention was the frequency that we can train the bench.
Oh, I want to get into that full and proper, so let's do it.
Yeah, you want to get into that now?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so because the bench press is the smallest range of motion of the three lifts, and it uses the smallest muscle groups of the three lifts, we can hit it a little bit harder because our recovery is going to be better through those muscle groups. So the time taken from stimulus to where we adapt to the stimulus is going to be shorter than the squat and the deadlift, so we can then hit it again sooner. So it's a good idea to train the bench press more frequently, and that doesn't have to be the bench press, but a variation of the bench press. So I guess the muscle groups that move the bench press, shoulders, triceps, pecs, like we said before, more frequently than the lower body, like for the squat or deadlift.
Yeah, so like just as like an axiom, completely agree. What I think is important to consider in saying that though is during your phases, at what point is it best to sort of really ramp up bench frequency, and at what point can you sort of let it sit back at sort of two times a week, say, or three times a week? So I'm going to run through a couple of scenarios and I'd love to hear Alex's thought. So for instance, I can't recall the last time I got a lifter to bench, and like I'm going to say bench meaning like competition bench or close variant, less than twice a week. Alex, can you remember the last time you had somebody do less than twice?
Not less than twice.
No. So I think for me, twice is at the low point of what I would ever do. I would only ever do like one time a week bench press, or like one time a week pressing if somebody had some type of injury, or there was like a particular reason why we were de-emphasizing the bench, because otherwise I don't think once a week is sufficient. And because you can recover quickly, you should do more. During hypertrophy phases, when we're doing heaps of general work, although you can actually recover from heaps of stimulus, I tend to think that when you're trying to build muscle, some higher volumes per session are probably beneficial. And because of that, I think you can consolidate work to probably two like hardish bodybuilding sessions of pressing stuff per week. But then I'm also open to, on top of that, having like a technique session or like a light top up session of volume. So you might have 2 days where you do like, you know, 6 to 10 actual sets of like bodybuilding type pressing. So, you know, some touch and go bench and then some dumbbell work or whatever. And then one day where you might do another 3 or 4 of either like a tempo bench or like an incline bench or something where it's a bit less stressful and light. I would probably start with technique work in that instance. And then I would only really go to high frequency bench pressing during like a strength block or a peak, where at least a couple of those days are focused on skill. So, you know, you'd have a couple of days that are like heavy overloading days and a couple of days that are more like technique oriented or a bit lighter, because I think the skill element's really important. But because your per session volumes are a little bit lower, it's okay to train more frequently. Or like higher than about 3 times a week, I would very rarely go to with men, but with women I might do it, because again, they just seem to recover from bench really quickly. Alex, there was heaps of points in there, but what do you think?
Yeah, I tend to go with, during a general prep phase, I tend to go with 3 times a week, with 2 of those days being like quite high volume pressing days. Like it might be 2 exercises of 3 to 5 sets.
Yeah.
And then that third day being like a technique. So it might be a long pause or a tempo bench or something that's just ingrained in that technique. And then the other days will be hitting hard with the volume.
Yeah.
And I actually like to run with that same format all the way through like a comp cycle. I'll just change those heavier days or like the higher volume days, and I'll reduce the volume and I might take away the second pressing movement.
Yeah. So it's like you have 2 higher stress days and then 1 low stress day. It's just whether the stress is like a volume or intensity stress.
Yeah.
Well, like I think that makes sense as well. I guess the reason I wanted to talk about that is because in my head, like conceptually, although the bench can handle higher frequency than the other ones, the important thing for me to think about is sort of like, how do you use the frequency with which you're choosing to train the bench synergistically with your phase related goals? So if it's hypertrophy, I think like you want to hit a muscle hard about twice a week.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if it's strength, like you need to actually put a strength stimulus in, you know, maybe twice a week, but you need to have that technique stimulus pretty frequently for the bench and it can handle it. So higher is maybe tenable then.
Yeah, I think especially in a peaking phase, if you do go to 4 times, and I've had this happen a few times recently, actually, if you do go to 4 times, you need to make sure that those 2 easy days are very easy.
Yeah.
And that's like, I can't stress that enough. I've had 2 guys recently get like little niggles in the elbow and shoulder, and I've had to remove like an entire day of pressing because of that. So like, I think 4 can be a good idea, but you have to be smart about it.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And I think, actually that's almost, it's not in opposition to your prior point, but it's a really important one to consider, is just because you consider that training a lift more frequently is, you know, is possible because you're likely to recover from it systemically and, you know, it'll probably benefit from it. If you try and shoehorn yourself, and this, the same is true for trying to do more volume, because lots of people consider volume the main driver of progress. If you try and sort of shoehorn yourself towards a higher frequency or higher volume response in pursuit of optimality, but it causes you to get hurt and not actually be able to train, then it's no longer really optimal. Like, it's optimal on paper, but it's not optimal because you're not actually getting better. Whereas if you'd just done a slightly more conservative approach and been able to train hard and go all the way through, you'd be better.
Yeah. This all comes back to something that we, I guess, speak about every week, is that if you get hurt, you can't train. And, you know, what helps you get better? Actually training.
Yeah.
So, you know, you need to keep that in mind. If you're hearing us say 3 times a week benching is great, and you try and do it and you hurt yourself, don't keep doing it. Go back to what you can manage.
And also complaints to @AlexHayes_lift if you hurt yourself. I've just derailed you. What were you saying?
Just add this to the video demo.
All right.
Yes. Be mindful and listen to your body. Don't try and just do a certain number of times per week because you've heard someone say it or you've heard us say it. Try things out. Especially if you're currently at 2 times and you heard Will say 4 times, don't double your frequency unless you're those 2 days you're adding it just like very, very light and they gradually get harder. But yeah, be smart about adding in frequency, just like you would be smart as adding in volume or just like you'd be smart at adding in an extra exercise or whatever the case is.
Yeah. In fact, that's actually a trend that, like when you were saying be smart when you're adding frequency and volume, that's a trend that I've observed, and it's particularly true with, I think, bodybuilders, because like bodybuilders like to think of going in and working hard and getting a pump and being sore, is when they say, oh, I've been hitting every muscle once a week, but I'm, you know, keen to start doing it twice a week because I heard it's more optimal, brah. I'm brah in this instance. They like...
Yeah, don't do two of the same session that you've done once for everything, because yeah, that's literally doubling what you do.
Yeah, that's the point, is people go like, oh, I'm used to doing 40 sets of chest on Monday. Like, I don't know how I'm going to do that again on Thursday. I'm like, well, you know, if you did, well, not 40 in the first place, but if you did like, you know, 10 on one day and 10 on the other, you'd probably survive.
Like 40 sets of bench. I don't know if I'd get bored first or like, get injured first.
Mate, I get bored on 4 sets of bench a week.
Like, 40 sets of chest. Fuck, man.
But seriously, like, and so that's one of the hardest things to wrap your head around is like, you know, although I do think there is benefit to having like hard consolidated work in a session here and there, you do have to think about how much weekly stimulus you're giving yourself. And so when you go to add frequency, like Alex said, you know, make it easy if you're adding volume, or literally split your current work you know, across those extra days before adding a little bit of extra work into, I think, one of the days at a time, so it suddenly becomes hard and easy rather than just 2 easy days before you make it 2 equally hard days again, you know. But you actually have to titrate the stimulus up and see how you're going, or else you're going to get hurt.
Yeah, this is something that Hanny spoke about on episode 17.
Yeah, shout out Hanny.
Yeah, go listen to episode 17 if you haven't. It's a good one. He speaks about adding in frequency and making it like so novel and so just nothing as a starting point before actually adding in anything overloading, and how that has helped a lot of his lifters, just that third or even fourth exposure to something, some movement, can be really, really helpful, so long as you start conservative enough.
Yeah. Quick,
we went way off tangent.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's good to have gotten out probably some good content this episode. Let's have a really quick break and we'll be right back.
Weekly Weights.
Okay, back on episode 20 of Weekly Weights, fixing the bench. Last couple of things we want to cover, one of which was, what variations do we choose to use when we're not doing the competition bench press? So we've already kind of touched on this one, but I like to sort of delineate the variations I use. And I do the same thing when I'm thinking about squats and deadlifts into stuff that is just like grunt work. And I consider grunt work stuff that is just useful, works the prime movers through a long range of motion, and you can knock out lots of reps on it. Stuff that I consider really appropriate for technique. So it like it highlights one aspect of technique that I consider to be important. And it's usually stuff that you load a little bit lighter, so it's generally less stressful. It really highlights something technically useful. And then there's sort of like a third box I consider other, where it could be useful in a technique application or for just like general strength work as well. So in bench press, the go-to grunt work, I've already listed a bunch of them, but things like touch and go bench press, close grip bench, dumbbell variations, and then I also think incline bench press and feet up bench press are really useful ones just to knock out a whole bunch of rep work with. Alex, are there any in there that you disagree with or any you'd add?
I wouldn't add any or disagree with any, but there are like further variations you can add to those variations, like such as changing your grip width or your tempo and pausing or whatever.
Yeah, I think like things like changing,
keeping it fresh is always a good idea.
Yeah, I think changing your grip width actually is probably a good one to just quickly talk about. So other than like your competition grip and your close grip, in the instance, particularly of people with kind of longer arms, or actually, sorry, I should say, yeah, people with longer arms and a good arch, or people who have a really good arch and a generally short stroke, sometimes bringing them into a moderate grip and telling them to press with a bit of a flat back is good during hypertrophy phases, literally because it just lengthens the range of motion that they have to use. So it's going to entail them using a little bit less weight, but a longer range of motion means that the muscle is having to produce more force over that range. It's exposed to tension for longer. It's good for building muscle. So I think that's like that's a useful variation to use. I don't think I've ever in like a strength phase asked somebody to use like a moderate grip as opposed to like their normal competition grip or close grip. Like I pretty much go close grip or competition for most applications. Then just during hypertrophy, I might say moderate and flatter backed. Alex, any thought on that or not really?
Yeah, I tend to change grips away from the competition grip further out from competition. I would probably, different to what you said, I probably wouldn't use a close grip closer to a competition. I'd probably use a mid grip closer to a competition because it's closer to the competition grip, I guess. But other than that reason, I can't really think of why I would do that. But yeah, I would kind of close to competition, keep things comp grip specific much more so than further out. And probably 90% of your pressing would be done with your comp grip.
Yeah.
Like the last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Or more.
I don't disagree with that, to be honest, in practice either. Yeah. But I think in like a general strength phase, there would definitely be a place for doing close grip bench pressing. Yeah, because definitely. Again, it's got that long stroke. It's hard on the triceps.
Definitely. Especially people with short arms who have like very little range of motion.
Or in that instance, you do close grip because it lengthens the range of motion?
Yeah.
So I think people with long... hey, point of disagreement, guys. Listen up. I think people with like long spindly arms get smashed by close grip because their stroke gets lengthened even further. And because that like that portion during which you have to grind in the bench is longer for people with long arms. So I think doing some close grip work, particularly when the two lifts are really discrepant, is often useful for them in strength phases too.
I actually think you'll find that the people with shorter arms have worse close grip bench than the people with longer arms do relative to their comp bench.
You reckon?
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't observed that.
And though. I found using a longer range of motion really, really good at like strengthening, obviously, the musculature and helping the lifter able to grind through. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed this with Chrissy in her last comp prep. Forever she was like, it would go or not.
Mm.
And in her last comp prep, we did a lot of feet up bench and we did a lot of mid-grip benching to take her legs away from it because she was so reliant on her technique that if she fell out of a groove even just a tiny bit, it wouldn't move off her chest. And I think just drilling that musculature to move through the motion and not rely so much on creating that environment to be successful that we spoke about earlier, because Chrissy has a great setup and really tight.
For those who haven't seen Chrissy bench press, she's got a very, very good arch. She's got short arms. Her elbows go wide. Like she's got a very short, very efficient press.
Yeah. So because her bench is so reliant on technique, it was so reliant on technique that if she fell out of her groove, it would either go or her press would either go or it wouldn't go at all.
Mm.
And using those longer range of motions and using a lot of volume through mid grip and close grip and stuff like that, and especially feet up bench because it takes her arch away a little bit. That allowed her to sort of gain the ability to fight through a rep when it got hard, and she actually was able to grind through a third at her last comp.
Yeah. Well, all of that makes sense to me, so that's cool. And that actually brings me up to a reason I think feet up bench is useful other than taking the arch away, which is because you do lose that stability through your lower body, it really gives you a good sense for what your shoulders are doing and how you're creating tension and stability through them. It gives you a very good feel for which reps you're actually like holding your position as you descend, which is one of the reasons I like to use it. So I could see feet up being almost a useful technique variation, but because it lengthens your range of motion, it puts so much like stress, I guess, on your shoulders and pecs. You know, I consider it a really great muscle building one. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, cool. So let's move on to the ones that, for me, I like using on technique or easy days. So one is tempo descent bench, which you've spoken about. Do you do tempo both ways or just tempo on the descent?
Just in the descent. Yeah. Because we're always trying to really, like what we spoke about with Baxter last week, it's like a throw.
Yeah.
And we're really trying to get that bar moving quickly off the chest. And I think if we don't do that, if we're not trying to reverse the movement on the way down, it becomes a different movement to if we were.
So what if somebody were to have that issue where as they started pressing all the time, their shoulders shrugged up and they fell into sort of internal rotation and flared too early? Do you think slowing down the pressing motion would be helpful in that instance, or would you attack it another way?
Probably attack it another way through like teaching them how to be stable through the shoulders first.
Yeah.
So like that stuff we spoke about earlier.
Yeah.
Like more warm-up-y stuff, banded stuff, stuff like that before going into tempo bench. I've never used a tempo bench on the way up before.
Yeah. I mean, neither have I.
I'd be interested to see if that would work.
I haven't either. I'm literally playing devil's advocate because I don't know what I think.
I think the importance of being able to reverse the press on the way up, like from the control on the way down, is really, really important. And that's why we do different variations of the comp bench, like tempo or like touch and go or like long pause or like regular pause, is that we're teaching the lifter to be able to reverse it under any circumstance. Because we don't know how long the press call is going to be in a competition, and it kind of gets the lifter ready for that.
Yeah. So tempo descent, I think is a great technique variation. Long pauses.
Before you go any further with that, what kind of reps and sets would you use for a tempo bench, and at what percentage?
Always low reps. And like by low, I mean 5 or less. So like I would never get somebody to do like 8s or 10s on tempo descent because it's just painful.
Mm-hmm.
And 5s I would only do very early in a block. But yeah, often like sort of 4s, 3s, 2s. I would start light, like I'm talking 60-65%, but bench can be so comically easy that I don't mind the technique work getting up higher to like 75%. But when I'm saying 75%, it's like 75% of a comp bench for triples. And you might even push a little bit heavier than that late, but it should feel like you've got like, you know, 4 or 5 reps in reserve. And that's probably the real tell. But I start my cycles for my clients for technique work at like 60-65%. So like that light, really easy.
Yeah, I tend to keep things even a little bit easier than you do, just as a reflection on keeping things absolutely perfect in the descent. But yeah, that's just personal preference. I don't think if you went up to 75% like Will said, I don't think you would run into many problems.
Yeah, I guess actually probably the best tell is if it's not really good, then it's probably too heavy.
Yeah.
If it's really good and they're not fatigued, you could make it a little bit heavier, but only if you actually want that day to be harder.
Yeah, I don't think that day needs to be hard at all. And I think that's probably the point there, is that it's not hard and that it's perfect.
Yeah.
So keeping, erring on the side of caution there and keeping things really, really light and really, really easy is like super important with tempo bench.
Yeah, let's, as a case in point, so Chrissy, who I'm now coaching, has I think it's a long pause bench press the day before her main bench pressing day. And in her second 4 weeks in there, I think she's repeating the exact same loading for one less rep than she did in her first block, literally because I want that day to be really easy and perfect. And because her second day is getting a little bit harder, so she has to just be a little bit fresher for it.
Yep.
So in the context of the program, it has to basically be easy enough that you can practice it perfectly without being unduly tired for later.
Yeah.
Anyway, tempo descents, and we've also spoken about long pauses. They're my other go-to for technique days. And again, I think we've pretty well covered what the benefits of them are. But
yeah, so similar loading and set and rep scheme to the tempo bench.
Yeah.
But we're teaching the lifter to hold tension on the chest. So it's kind of different to the tempo bench, but it's the same idea.
Yeah.
Is that if we're watching a video of the lifter and we pause the bar on the chest, it should look the same in any variation they do.
Yeah. So I think the tempo descent's probably better for people who have like descent issues.
Yeah.
And the pause one is better for people who have issues actually holding their position on the chest.
Yeah.
But you know, they find their position on the chest well.
Yeah, if you find someone who like bobbles around the chest, or they're a little bit inconsistent on the chest. Oh, sorry, bobbles around on the chest and isn't able to keep the bar still, then long pauses are a good idea for them. But if you find someone who sort of touches inconsistently, like in different spots, up or down, too high or too low or whatever, then the tempo bench is going to be a good choice for them.
Yeah, and I think closer to competitions, I'm curious for your thoughts on this. Close to competitions, I prefer using long pauses just because it gets them actually descending the way they normally would, and it's more specific to comp. You get that practice reacting to the call.
Yeah, definitely. Further out from competition, I like to use the tempo bench as my technique day, and then closer to competition and in the peaking block, I would use a longer pause.
Yeah, and another technique variation that I don't really use personally often, mostly because I don't like doing it myself, if I'm honest, but I think they can help, is pin bench. I just want to know what your opinion on pin bench is and when you would use them, Alex.
I think pin benches can be useful for some people, and this is similar to the tempo bench, is someone who is inconsistent with how they touch their chest. So you set the pin like just above the chest, and you want each side to come down and touch at the same time. Mm. So you could do what you do with the chalk on the bar, but put the chalk on the sides of the bar where the pins are going to touch, and look at whether they go forward or back. And then obviously you'll hear if they touch at the same time. And if they're inconsistent touching side to side, that can help them with sort of bringing each arm down together.
See, I would think pin bench is more useful. Like, I would set the pins just above the chest, just like you. But I would think pin bench is useful mostly for people who are already quite consistent, because the issue is if they're inconsistent in their descent, so if they're touching higher and lower on the chest each time, they're going to hit the pins at the same point up and down anyway, if that makes sense. So they could feasibly touch the pins forward and back, which is why you would mark it with chalk. But to me, that doesn't give them good feedback of, like, that was a good descent, that was a good descent. It just specifically loads that sticking point really well. So I feel like if you're technically consistent, then you don't have to worry about, are they hitting the pins in the right place, because they're going to, and you just get to load the sticking point well.
I mean more of like a side-to-side inconsistency.
Okay.
Like hitting one side before the other.
Yeah.
But I, for the reason that you said the overloading the sticking point, yeah, I would use a block or a board press first, because I think that contact with the chest is actually really important.
Yeah.
And it's important that we, even when we use a block or a board, that we touch soft and that we're teaching the soft touch, because yeah, we're maintaining tension. If we use pins, it's a lot easier for the lifter to just drop the bar and just lose all tension,
yeah,
and then pick it back up on the way up. And we obviously don't want to teach that. So I think using a board or a block is probably a better decision than using the pins.
Yeah, and it's funny because I really like pin squats and I think they're so useful for teaching things, but I just haven't found pin benches to be as useful. It's not to say I think they're a bad movement, they're just like, they just don't fit really much with my philosophy.
Yeah, yeah. I've used them very sparingly recently, but I got a good result out of them with AT, Alex Toming, shout out Alex, who was pretty inconsistent side to side, and her left side would touch before her right side. And we've started doing some pin benches, and it's evened up a lot. I don't know whether that's because of the pins, but it has.
It's coincided with the pins that you've done well. Okay, and then do you have any others actually that are like your go-to technique bench variations that we haven't spoken about?
Technique bench? No.
No.
I like comp bench more than anything else.
Yeah.
I like tempo bench a lot. I like long pauses a lot. I like board presses a lot for the reason I just spoke about.
Yeah.
And outside of that, no, not really.
Okay. Well, my couple of other ones. So board press is one that I do like. A low board for me, like, you know, a one board, at most a two board, but like a one board press is good. And I think they're just a little bit easier on the shoulders. I think they're also a good way of like sort of easing people into actually holding their shoulder position on the chest. So if you have somebody who's descents like really good except for the last inch or two, then you can actually train them doing everything right with a board press because you've avoided the range of motion that they're bad at. So I think that can be okay.
I think boards are great for overloading the triceps in like a close grip, closer grip than comp grip.
Yeah.
If you use a really long pause.
Yeah.
Classic Wiltsy.
Yeah.
I've used that with a lot of people lately and have gotten good results from that. What was the other one? Oh, for another reason for the boards is a lot of people get like a bit niggly in the elbows for full range and the shoulders from full range.
Close grip, hey?
Yeah. So using the board can be a way of getting through some more tricep specific work without aggravating the shoulders.
Yeah, I'm 100% for that. And then my other one that falls in the moderate box, like the can use it for technique work or for grunt work, that I like is Spodo Press. And the reason I like Spodo Press is because it can make you very aware of your elbow positioning. And it can also teach you to be ready to sort of reverse the bar straight away. So when I get people to do a Spodo Press, I like them to stop extremely close to the chest. Like it's almost like a shirt press. Like you should be, you know, a centimeter or less off the chest. And because you stop and pause in that position for 1 second, if you're at that point normally likely to have your elbow fall out of line, you really feel it. And you really feel what it's like to be straining your chest up to the bar. I like it for that reason. I like less convinced, but I also think it's an okay way to overload that sticking point because you're having to reverse the bar even closer to where it normally starts to slow down. But the main thing is that it just gives you a really good feel for what stacking your joints feels like.
Yeah, in theory, I agree entirely because it makes sense. But in practice, I think it's very rare to see people do them actually well. So unless someone has like really, really good control of their bench, it's probably not the best variation because it's so hard to control it properly. And you have to use limit weights, like very, very light weights, like limited weights, to do it well. And then often you don't get enough out of it if it's too light. So I think it's something that needs to be moderately loaded, like in the 70 to 80 range probably.
Yeah.
And if the lifter can't do it well, it's probably not worth its use.
Yeah, I mean, I don't strongly disagree there, but I think you can, in the 70 to 80% range, do them for like triples cleanly, you know, or sets of four cleanly, and you'll probably get a little bit out of them.
Yeah,
I don't think you can use
but
them.
I don't think they are as good as anything that we've spoken about earlier. Like, I think you'd be better off using something else.
Look,
unless the lifter can really, really do it well, then sure.
Sure. Well, I mean, I consider them a tool in the toolkit. Of my lifters at the moment, I don't think any are doing a Spodo Press, but it's certainly something I would consider under those circumstances. And yeah, like Alex said, I think they have to be done well to get that carryover, like position, particularly because I'm saying the position or the positional aspect is important. But just because I have to be done well to be effective doesn't mean I necessarily think they're a bad movement, though I do take your point. One more question I want to ask or ask you is floor press. Do you use it? Do you think it's useful, and when?
I think it can be useful again in theory, but in practice it's a little bit awkward to set up for.
Yeah.
So I tend to not, because it's kind of a bit of a waste of space. You kind of have to use a whole power rack for it.
Yeah. So
it's not really conducive to like using the gym efficiently with space, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, like, floor press I've got mixed feelings about, because I think like it could be useful for a variety of reasons. It gives you really good external feedback for whether your arms are descending at the same rate. You can really feel if you've got scapular retraction. Teaches you whether your joints are stacked. All those things are good. But yeah, it's a bit of a pain to set up. And then the other thing that I think makes it really hard to say where the floor press is going to be useful for you is because on an individual by individual basis, the point in your range of motion at which your elbows hit the floor in a floor press is really variable. So like if you happen to have very short arms, then your floor press could be like, you know, quite low down versus somebody who has long arms, or like in this instance, sorry, I'm saying like long lower arm. I've completely forgotten what the name of your radius and ulna are. If you have relatively long forearms, the bar is going to be sitting high off your chest versus somebody who has longer humeruses and shorter forearms, and so on and so on and so on. And the size of your torso plays into it. And it just means that like where we'd say like a board press or a pin press or something, you can really establish this is where I want the bar to stop. In the case of a floor press, you can't do that.
Yeah.
It's basically the bar is going to stop where it stops. And if that happens to coincide with a point in the range of motion that you want to train, then you can have all those other benefits and it's great. But if it doesn't, then even if you want all those other benefits, it's not really loading usefully, and it's a pain in the ass to set up, so why bother?
The stars almost have to align perfectly for it to be like a good choice.
Yeah. So that's what I think about floor press. Okay, one final discussion point, and then we'll let you all go. And that is, you said back work is important for the bench press, mm-hmm. and other stabilizer work is important. Quickly, why and how?
Well, we've just spoken about how important the descent is in the bench press.
Yeah.
And being able to descend well is very related to how strong and how stable your back is.
Yeah.
So I guess that's why it is important.
Right. So
because obviously, like we've said, I've said this like six times, but the environment that you create is what makes your press easy.
Sure. But I guess, you know, when the bar is coming down to your chest, I'm playing devil's advocate because I actually largely agree, and I'll jump in with my thoughts eventually. But when the bar's coming down to your chest, you know, your upper back isn't really pulling the bar down because gravity's pushing the bar down and your chest is, you know, eccentrically resisting the bar coming down. So, you know, what role are all those mid-back muscles playing to support it? You know, and are your lats important in the bench press, for instance? Like, why is it that having a big back actually helps?
I don't know if it's having a big back, but it's having a strong enough back and like a good enough, I guess, control of the back to be able to stabilize the bar.
Yeah. So I actually agree. But it's a little bit more nuanced. So having a thick back, I think, could help because, you know, it shortens the range you have to move a little bit. But the main thing, like Alex said, is control. And the reason I think rowing, particularly like horizontal rowing, is important and helpful is because when, like, we've spoken about how the shoulder has to be retracted and depressed, when you do good rows where you finish with your chest, like with your chest high, you practice that position. So you're pulling yourself into that, and particularly rows where you have like an isometric hold, or you finish with that strong chest up, shoulders packed down contraction, you get a lot of benefit. What I think can make back work actually not detrimental to your bench, but not help at all, is if, and again, guys, imaginary seated row machine now. So reach your arms out ahead of you, pull your elbows to your sides, and then pull your elbow way past your side and let your shoulders round up and forward. A lot of people are inclined to sort of do their back work like that, where they finish with like a big shrugging movement, their shoulders tip forward and the humerus tips back in the joint. In that instance, you're, rather than taking yourself into the range that you want at the bottom of your bench press, you're rolling way forward and assuming the position, the exact one that we don't want.
So yeah, you're teaching yourself to collapse at the bottom.
Yeah.
Like your elbows to end up behind the bar, which we spoke about earlier.
Yeah. So to have your back work carry over best, you should actually be trying to practice as you pull the bar to your chest, or if you're doing like a pull down or a neutral grip pull down, you've got to keep your chest high and actually pull your shoulders back in together.
Yeah.
And if you can do that and then create that stability that Alex was talking about, you set yourself up to do, you know, good bench presses. But if you just dump forward at the shoulder to finish off your back range of motion, then you don't.
Yeah, you should also be trying to extend your spine as well.
Yeah.
Like you would in a bench. So like if get yourself into this imaginary seated row, you're in depression, retraction, and then as you pull your elbows towards you, you're pulling your chest up to the imaginary bar that you're pretending you're benching with.
Yeah.
So like you should be attacking your back work, your pull downs, your rows, your whatever you're doing, the same way that you attack the descent in the bench.
Yeah.
And almost like just doing it reverse.
Yeah. So yeah, in that like, and in that respect, I think back work's very important and helpful.
And even like a further point is maybe cut your reps a little bit short to avoid taking your shoulders out of position.
Oh, 100%. Actually, this is, we need to start Weekly Weights TV. This is something I actually tell a lot of my clients to do, is I don't say, like, when somebody's doing a seated row, I don't say pull the handle to your tummy or whatever. I tell them pull your elbows to your side and keep your hands wide, right? Because keeping your hands wide in a seated row, if you've got your little neutral grip handle, keeping your hands wide keeps you a little bit externally rotated. If you pull your hands in and you round forward and up at the elbow, at the shoulders arbitrarily just to touch yourself, you haven't actually gotten that full scapular retraction.
That's why I like the wider neutral grip handle better than the narrow one.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier to do that, hey?
Yeah, it's easier to control your shoulders.
Yeah, but yeah, you should be pulling your elbows to your sides and finishing with a big chest, not pulling your elbow way past your body and finishing with a rounded chest.
Yeah.
All right. I have like literally nothing more to say about bench press. Be jacked, get good technique, get strong.
Yeah.
That's like the summary of the Powerlifting 101. All right. Yeah, guys, that brings fixing the bench to a conclusion.
Everyone's going, thank God.
Thank God for that.
We will eventually do deadlift.
Yeah, eventually do deadlift. Probably. Greg Knuckles is coming on next week, everybody, so be very excited for that.
If you want to see a certain guest, now that we have this app that we can record Skype calls, if you want to see someone in particular, let us know and we'll do our best to contact them. And if you say Alan Aragon, no thanks.
Actually, you could also go to anybody that you want us to interview on our behalf and solicit interviews with them. Just DM everybody Weekly Weights.
Yep.
Or don't do that. We'll actually contact them professionally. But you can also do that too.
We'll contact them professionally.
Yeah, I'll contact them professionally. All right. Thanks so much, guys. We'll chat to you next week. Have a good one.
I am Will, and you can find me at W.BerkmanPT.
And I am Alex, and you can find me at AlexHayes_lift.
We are Weekly Weights.
And you can find us on the iTunes store and on Podbean. Just search for us and give us a 5-star review, and we'll read it out on the show.